Greetings and welcome to the AVOD. I'm Count Vargelon, joined in a very special bonus-ode by...
This is Mickey Mouse, and I am inviting you, Count, and the entire AVOD crew to come join the Disney Plus Empire, Disney family.
I thought you should have gone Monopoly family.
It'll be a lot easier if you say yes now.
Oh, God. So you heard the Simpsons news yesterday too as well.
I am just so racked with all sorts of feelings with this one. Cause now they have stormtroopers, so they can send your house to make sure that we are all under one happy roof.
I know. There's one corporation left in a couple of years. It's just going to be Disney. They're going to own everything.
This is why I'm like looking for DCU. I may not love all their films, but God damn it. At least they're out the umbrella.
I know, but the problem is once they become financially viable enough, Disney's going to buy them too.
Absolutely.
Because that's the problem. Right now they're only not getting bought because Disney doesn't see enough profit in it. The second they seem profitable, Disney's going to sweep in and buy them too.
I can't. It's a small world after all, my friend.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's upsetting. But we are here to talk in this special bonus-ode about a DC movie. And I got to say, I'm just going to say it. I'll put my cards down to start. Probably the best DC movie, I think.
Yeah.
I think I like this more than Aquaman or Wonder Woman.
I'll say the most entertaining.
Definitely the most entertaining.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely.
From a craft standpoint, Aquaman's probably a better film?
Yes. Yes.
I'd agree with that.
And I feel like even at Aquaman's length, like Aquaman at least could justify its epic length narratively. I felt like, and we'll get into it, but yeah. I feel like if this was 90 minutes, this would have been just perfect. I feel like
it does drag. Like, I'm going to agree with you right again. I will agree with you completely on that one. It does drag a little and it could have been a lot tighter. I mean, let's face it. We don't see Captain Marvel until 50 minutes into this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Zach Levi is
nowhere to be seen.
Yeah. But a memory until then. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. So basically, if you haven't seen the movie, there is a wizard named Shazam, of the Shazam of the title, and he wants to pass on the power of, the hero of all of the gods, the heroic embodiment of all of the gods mentioned in his acronym name, which I'm not gonna try to remember.
Yes.
But there's Zeus, obviously. Samson? No, Wisdom of Solomon.
It's like some collaboration of, I mean, they're not actually like peers in the gods.
Not at all. Yeah. Well, again, Solomon's just a real guy.
Exactly.
It's the Wisdom of Solomon, and then Atlas is thrown in there, and I'm like, well, he was a Titan, so okay, sure.
They had a great acronym, and they're like, all right, fuck it, let's just find some names that are gonna fit. Andrew, and that's a little too boring. Let's go.
Yeah, but the wizard Shazam, and he is way, way, way too picky when it comes to choosing a hero. He's a little gun shy because 2,000 years earlier, he turned The Rock into Black Adam, and Black Adam killed a lot of people. And so now he's a little gun shy about choosing a new person. And so he keeps testing people and they keep failing. And eventually Mark Strong gets very annoyed by this, and he spends his entire life learning magic so he can come and just steal power. And so the wizard literally just gives the powers to the next guy who turns up.
And you said he's picky. Like, first and foremost, when you say that he is too picky, I mean, he is the reason that Mark Strong, who is the embodiment of a little boy who was rejected, he is the adult of a little boy who was rejected 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And is a perfectly good candidate. And if anything, was was the victim of one dick of a father. I mean, like,
yeah.
With the opening scene, first off, the opening scene starts with shit. Like, yeah. That's the first line uttered in here. So it is a PG film, which I'm really kind of shocked for a few reasons, but
there's a lot of swearing in this PG-13 movie, and somebody gets their head bitten off.
Yeah, but it's PG. I mean, it's PG here, I think.
It's not PG-13?
I thought maybe, I don't know. I thought it was, anyway. But regardless, it goes dark for kids, for a film.
Very dark.
It's a more 80s era PG than it
There's
is.
And the thing is, no 80s era PG movie would have a car accident that traumatic in it. That's a really traumatic car accident to start the movie off on.
The little child is accused of killing his father. I mean.
Later it turns out he didn't die. But then the child kills him.
Then the child kills him, and then the other lead child is left in a carnival by himself, like, you know, by his mother, by his birth mother.
Abandoned by his mother.
Yeah, and really, I mean, that scene in and of itself is just, anyone who's a parent
anyone who has been a child is going to be horrified by that scene.
It's nightmare-inducing and panic-inducing. And then the mother, you know, just is like, oh, well, fuck it. See ya. I mean, A, she should be arrested. But anyway, that was just dark. So
just how dark it is. Cause the thing is, we, the audience, know right away what has happened, because you can't, unless his mother was murdered 1 minute later, he wasn't lost. He was abandoned.
Yeah.
Like that's the thing. We know that right away, but of course he would not think that right away or ever.
And before that, he seemed to be cared for. I mean, he was happy with his mom and they, you know, well dressed. It didn't look like he was disheveled. So it looked like as trying as it might have been to raise him, she was doing a decent job of it.
It seemed that way, right?
But she just stone cold just drops the kid.
Yep.
Leaves him and that's, so that starts the movie. Like
it is a very bleak opening to this movie, because we get two different introductions of terrible parents ruining children.
Yes. Right. Yes. So that
over 10 minutes.
That was really like, and going back to the father too, like even the traumatic car crash aside, the scene where this poor kid who grows up to be Mark Strong is essentially just playing with a magic eight ball in the back of a car, and the dad tells him, stop playing, you know, in the back. Like, what asshole father, like, yells at the kid for playing with, I mean, it's one thing if he's like blaring music from his iPhone or whatever, but
it's completely harmless.
He's shaking a quiet ball. He might as well be on an Etch-a-Sketch for all, you know, and he's like, stand up, you know, whatever. I mean, just like, what the fuck, man? That guy is like such a jerk. So.
And, that's John Glover, one of my favorite actors ever.
Absolutely.
As the dad, just a treasure of an actor. It's weird because watching this movie, like it's this weird nerd casting where you can't help but think of Smallville.
Yeah. You know? Gremlins vibe, especially when he was up at the Gremlins 2 vibe.
I know.
He was the head of the company, when he later became the head of the company, that big conglomerate there. God, I was like, oh my God, it's Shades of Gremlin 2.
It's a nod to Gremlins 2 as well. It's great. Yeah. It's
big, obviously, and Explorer, Goonies, all that.
Oh yeah, there is a huge amount of influence from 80s cinema in this one. I mean, not only is the whole premise big, right? But they actually put in the piano from Big.
Yeah. That's what I said. At least they just kind of embraced it and they said, all right.
They own it. They totally own it.
Right. So, yeah, that was the one thing that, aside from its length too, I mean, I do have a couple reservations that we can get into whenever you want to, but one of them was with that big comparison. I mean, we know that it embraced it, and I'm happier for either that they did, and they pointed that out. The one continuity issue that I had, though, was when we finally do get to meet Captain Thunderfingers or whatever, Lightning Fingers, whatever.
Red Cyclone is what they end up kind of settling on.
Yeah. Which is, I like how they handled that, because the fact that they can't say Captain Marvel, which is, they are on, by law, they cannot, because Marvel.
I know. It's so disgusting. Captain Marvel, a guy created when Stan Lee was what, 10 years old?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
You know, before his uncle had even started Timely Comics. Or bought Timely Comics or whatever. Captain Marvel was already the most popular thing in the world. And yet some reason they can't call him Captain Marvel.
He can't say his name. So he who shall not be named, when he ultimately becomes Zachary Levi, I felt as though he regressed as a person. I did not feel like when Tom Hanks became the older, we didn't get to know the little boy, the younger Tom, very well. But I felt like that the, and what was his, Asher Angel played the younger version of-
As Billy. A more mature person than Captain Marvel is.
He was more adult than Zachary Levi was, absolutely.
And that's a thing that Tom Hanks did in Big as well.
Yeah.
Like that's a thing where people don't understand, like, adults looking at 13-year-olds can't see how they're really behaving.
Right.
And when they try to imagine being 13 or 14, like they imagine it way younger than it is.
Yes. Yes. And the fact that we spent so much time with the younger version of Billy Batson and how intelligent and, you know, how much ingenuity he had and how quiet and subdued and thoughtful he was.
Why is he such a doof? When he becomes Captain Marvel.
He becomes like this, you know, slurpee drinking, beer buying, you know, just comic version of what we would consider to be a 13-year-old and not even close to the same Billy Batson that we saw in the first hour of the film. So
no, you're absolutely right. And that is like a legit problem with the movie. Like I agree with you 100% on that front that it's just a problem with the movie that it's like, okay, so here's the thing. I'm a big nerd for the actual Captain Marvel. It's my favorite Golden Age hero. And one of the most interesting things, now they've over the years gotten rid of what I think is the most interesting thing about Captain Marvel, which is that in a sense, Captain Marvel and Billy Batson are two distinct people. Now today, the way the character is presented now in comics, cartoons, and in this movie, he's literally just a body, man's body, boy's mind. The original conception of Captain Marvel is, it's very strange. Captain Marvel doesn't have independent memories than Billy Batson. Like, they have all the same memories, but by virtue of Captain Marvel being a full-grown man with a different brain and a different body, he does... Right. Think and act differently than Billy Batson does. Right? And this is actually, and that kernel of an idea is what led Alan Moore to invent postmodern superheroes with Marvel Man. Like that was all built around the central idea of, is the superhero you different than the human that becomes the superhero? Right? And and there was a cute little nod to that. The security guard's name was Moran. And, Marvel Man's real human name is Mike Moran.
Nice.
That was a little nod to Marvel Man. Yeah. So there was that little thing, but it wasn't, that's not touched on at all. And it's weird because the idea here is, in fact, the inverse was happening because he was becoming a full grown man and regressing mentally.
Absolutely. Yes.
It's weird.
It was just, it was incongruous only because of the time we spent so much time. Like you said before, it was almost a full hour.
Yeah, it's almost an hour. And other than the 10 minutes we spend, almost 10 minutes we spend with young Mark Strong, that whole hour is spent just with Billy, with no other characters really. Yeah. Again, we check in on Mark Strong. That's it.
Right. So that's why when it works. It works almost the same with Mark Strong's character. Like I realized all this trauma that he suffered too, but we have no concept that he'd become this evil genius, this mastermind of the seven deadly sins in the meantime too. I feel like there was just like these two chunks, they just had a tough time fitting them together of,
yeah.
of the origin aspect and then the present day quote unquote aspect of these characters. Now, that said, once it got rolling, I had no problem with it. I mean,
once
you know,
Captain Marvel, if you accept it, like once you accept what the movie is doing, I think it's a great ride.
Yes, absolutely. I totally agree. And Zachary Levi does a riotous job. I mean, he's
so funny.
He's great in there. I thought even the you know, the shout outs to kind of more modern day stuff like the YouTube filming the YouTube videos. I was fine with that. That was I was fine with him flossing. I just thought that was, it was just a lark and they just really seemed to have fun. They embraced, I love how they embraced the original costuming as well.
And they just like, no, we're not going to be ashamed of it. We're not going to do the DC thing where everyone gets metal plates or weird like texture in the thing. No, he's just wearing a goofy magic suit.
Yes. And that's it. And we're ashamed of it. Top of it. And, but still they just had fun with it. And I really liked that they kept that tone throughout.
Yeah, that was a really nice touch.
Yeah. Yeah. But he ends up going into a foster home, which was made up of,
an ethnically diverse cast of foundlings. Yes.
Every box was checked. I mean, do we have the overweight one? Yes. Do we have the Hispanic one? Yes. Do we have the cherubic, little girl? Check. Do we have the African American? Check. You know, I mean, they just.
The overweight Hispanic one was also gay.
And gay, possibly. Yeah. Yes. So again, every single box was checked for that. So,
yeah.
And honestly, the parents, I know some people have kind of mocked the parents. They're like, there's no foster family that would, you know, be that would work that
hard
that
to
help
yeah.
each other. Yeah. But I had no problem accepting that because that was the world that it created and it was fine.
No, I mean, I think if you're trying to say the foster parents are too nice, you're looking for too much to complain about.
Exactly. So then when he meets with them and he has trouble connecting with them because he still wants to go see who his mom is his birth mother is, who actually just happens to live, you know, 15 minutes away. And then they introduce Mark Strong's character, which that led to the second part of my, again, small complaints because overall I like this movie. I thought it was really fun. And I agree with you it was, you know, up there at least, if not tied with, then, you know, just a rung under Aquaman for me.
Yes.
But that because with the same reason that we had with buying Zachary Levi as the modern day Captain Marvel, I had the same issues with Mark Strong and felt like they really didn't even need to introduce a bad guy at all into this. And it could have been just him grappling with,
I was gonna say, thank you for saying that, because my big takeaway when I walked out of the movie was, did it really need a villain?
Not at all. Not at all. Could have ended with him finally coming back to his foster family and realizing, okay, this is my home. This is my family now. And it would have wrapped it up great. And what a different take from an origin story that would have been, and I think that would have made it so much stronger because usually the origin stories fall victim to the same thing that this one did, is that there's got to be some climactic showdown that is heavily edited and you need to be in the dark and, you know, there's...
like a great big fight scene where all the characters have to do their special abilities and blah, blah, blah. Like everybody has to have something to do and it has to be massively edited. And here, you've got seven different monsters to worry about in addition to Mark Strong.
Right, exactly. Each representing the seven deadly sins, which we, again, because they were so busy cramming everything into this, like, I didn't get a sense of what sin was. I knew sloth only because that was the slowest moving one.
Gluttony has a giant open stomach.
Right.
But which one is envy? Which one is lust? Which one is wrath? I don't know.
Exactly. And can we also say they're scary as shit too.
I know.
Jesus Christ. That's where the director I was wondering how the director, because he did Lights Out, which is...
He's a horror movie guy. Like, he comes from Lights Out and Annabelle. Like, he's a horror movie guy.
And that's where he really is like, all right, well, you know what? If I'm going to do a comic book movie, then guess what?
It's a light, funny, family-based comedy movie. I'm going to have the most horrifying monsters.
Exactly. Exactly.
It felt completely out of place with everything else on screen.
When they evolved, or when they kind of manifested themselves on the screen, not only was that, you know, way darker and kind of unnecessary too, but I also felt like he didn't give us a definitive way of how they existed and their genetic makeup in this world. Like,
yeah,
they turn to dust when you walk through them, so how are you to defeat them?
Yeah, it kind of bothered me that at one point, like, mostly they can be fought, but then at one point one of them has the ability to become insubstantial. I'm like, why aren't they doing that all the time then?
Right, right.
Rather than getting punched. That was a mistake. Like, if they could only, like, turn to dust when they were manifesting and leaving, that would be fine. But the fact that they could do that whenever they want was a weird choice.
It really, yeah, that was a strange, it just felt like they were biting off more than they could chew, and it really could have been two films. Like, I just felt like there could have been
Mark Strong. This is one of those movies where maybe they could have introduced Mark Strong.
Yes.
In the movie.
Exactly.
And set up that he'll be a bad guy next time. Because he's a guy who's been researching this and obsessed with this. And when, you know, Billy gets the powers, he's envious, and that brings him to the demons finally. Like, his envy at seeing someone actually finally get the powers is what finally brings him to the demons.
Right.
Like,
right.
That could have been interesting. And then you can save all of the seven deadly sins and Billy getting a super team of other Marvels for the second movie.
Exactly. And let them, because as quickly as that is introduced, and that's the other thing you just mentioned, you know, the fact that at the end, all of a sudden, all of the other foster siblings that he has now have now suddenly all have superpowers and same outfits and everything, and look like Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, and they were getting ready to like assemble into Voltron or something by the end, And that felt like that could have been winked at and then saved for the second one. Could have been a shade darker than this one. Because again, like, you know, when he unleashes the seven deadly sins, I mean, they go on a rampage where they're terrifying children. They're eating adults. You know, it's almost like they had like, you know, if you discovered Sloth in the Goonies and, you know, he took Chunk and just broke him in half and ate his. You know, I mean.
Yeah, that is the kind of effect it has for a kid's movie. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of this is, you're right, I think too intense for a kid's movie. Because I watched all of those, people are like, you know, movies for kids used to be pretty intense back in the 80s. And I'm like, I saw all of those movies. There weren't a lot of heads getting bitten off in them.
Right, right. Exactly. Exactly.
You know? The most intense one is Gremlins, and they keep most of it off screen in Gremlins.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, not a lot of people getting brutally murdered on screen in Gremlins the way happens in this.
And if they did, it was in a comical way, like getting shot through a second story window.
Oh yeah, you're right. The woman does, you're right. They do overpower the stair lift and she goes flying out the window. So you're right. That was more Tex Avery cartoon violence.
Right.
Than anything that's going to upset anyone.
So yeah, that just seemed.
And that's the thing. If you find a way to cut this down, if you take out the Mark Strong, Seven Deadly Sins, supervillain stuff, and you got yourself a 90-minute movie about this kid finding out what's important while becoming a superhero, I think you've got a much stronger movie.
Yes.
And the elements of that in there, right, are, you know, are really strong. I think the acting's really good. I think the kid is great.
Oh my God, right. Both him and
Freddy are fantastic.
Yes, what is his name?
I don't remember the real
Jack. Jack Dylan Grazer.
Yes, that's it. He's fantastic.
Great.
He's so good.
Very witty and, you know, shout out to the casting director who put Adam Brody as him as an adult.
Oh my God.
That was perfect.
Well, no, I mean, and by the way, that is like the best in-joke I've ever seen.
Right.
Which exactly. That's like, the OC is going to go off the air.
Yep.
And so Josh Schwartz says to himself, I'm going to need a new show. What if Seth Cohen was a spy? Huh? Exact same character, move him over, now he's a spy? Huh?
Yep.
For whatever reason, it's not Adam Brody, Zachary Levi. And now they're on screen together.
And now here they are, exactly. Yes.
So perfect.
Really well done, and I'm excited to see what happens next. I just, that could have been even just, again, just winked at the end of this one.
Yeah.
Like you said.
Yeah.
To make it tighter and feel like there's that tonal shift wouldn't be as noticeable.
Yeah. Well, no, because it's half a horror movie and I don't know that it needed to be.
Right.
That's stuff you can, and also just as a Captain Marvel nerd, it's like, don't keep throwing tigers at me when you have no intention of including Mr. Tawny the Learned Tiger. Okay. Like just don't do that.
Filler shout out.
Yeah. Okay. I did like when Mr. Mind was, I mean, I did like that Mr. Mind was there.
Yeah.
Although he didn't have glasses on, which is a little sad, because what makes him so cute is that he's a caterpillar who wears glasses.
Okay. Maybe that's to come. Maybe
he'll get some glasses in the next one. Maybe he has reading problems that they will diagnose in the next one.
He's just ordering them online. He's waiting for the shipment. That's all.
That would actually be pretty nice.
Yeah.
You know what? And I mean, I know they're never going to adapt my favorite, Captain Marvel story ever. So I just want to let everyone know what that is. There is actually a story from Captain Marvel, and this is true. Everything I'm about to tell you is true, where they took on the real-life problem of redlining by doing a story where Mr. Tawny tries to buy a house in the suburbs, and the racist homeowners association tries to run him out of town.
Nice.
Yep.
Nice.
That's an actual comic from the 1950s.
Wow.
They were looking at the horrific problems of redlining and they're like, how can we do this in a children's comic? Let's say that they think it's too dangerous to allow tigers to live in the suburbs.
Well, at least it was a little bit more subtle. They didn't do like Black Panther or something. No, so
yes, exactly. But it's like, it's not very subtle, but that's an actual story that I'm like, if you want to win your Oscar, Captain Marvel 2, that's the story you've got to tell.
Yes, tackle gentrification. That's great.
Yeah. A tiger fighting a homeowners association. That's your story.
Yeah.
No, you're right. I think the key element, I enjoyed this, but you're from, just looking at narrative structure. Yes, Aquaman is a stronger film, right? Absolutely. Because it's got this clear arc for him. And what's important is the villain ties in and the villain's plot all tie in with Arthur's arc, right? Here, yeah. Mark Strong is completely, except for the fact that Mark Strong getting the powers is the reason they give, Billy his powers. He is completely not related to what's going on in Billy's story.
He's absent altogether. Exactly.
All you can say is, the closest you can say is, well, they both have problems with their families.
Right. And then
that's
when we,
it. Like, that's got the closest.
These like quasi omnipotent powers of time teleportation and ability to summon evil and take a staff from Shazam himself. I mean, there was just, there was a lot that just felt like, okay, well, this is it's a big leap to go from a traumatized 8-9-year-old who was holding a magic 8-ball now to this, you know, this iPad.
Monster man. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're right. They could have made his journey happen over two movies to full on villainy.
Exactly.
Cause
exactly.
If you think about it, right? The cornerstone of Billy's journey is when he has to face the truth of his, like that's his showdown. When he meets his mother and he finds the truth of his life.
Right.
At that moment, that is when his arc is essentially complete. All that's left for him to do is reconcile with his foster family and see that there are people who actually value him in a way his own family didn't. And the fact that they have to bombastically add layers and layers to that with a giant fight scene and the whole foster family becomes superheroes is just, it's bigger than the story of Billy required.
Yes. Yes. You know,
and that's why it doesn't tie together as neatly as something like Aquaman does. Cause Aquaman has a gigantic story of fate and destiny and becoming the king of Atlantis. This is about a guy accepting that family is who you choose it to be.
There's your fundamental, and that should bookend your narrative right there.
Yeah.
And the journey within, the hero's journey within of just him. I mean, you're one, obstacle is just yourself in that, you know, where you're just trying to wrestle with the fact that you're now given these powers of all these different superpowers, and how do you harness them after being a street hoodlum for the majority of your youth that bounces from foster family to foster family and really learn the responsibility of them.
How do you learn to do the right thing when you suddenly got all of this power? And the best part is, right, if you did it that way, you could have this question of, well, what did Shazam see in me?
Right.
You can have the wonderful self-doubt. It's like, why did I get these powers? What did Shazam see in me that he thought? And that's a really interesting idea, because Shazam gives him the powers in this because Shazam is desperate.
That's exactly it. Yeah, it's a Hail Mary pass.
It is literally a Hail Mary pass. He's just, the next guy on the list was Billy Batson. And he defended a crippled kid against some bullies. That's great. I'm glad he did that. But it's like, he was always going to give the powers to Billy because he had no strength left to keep them himself. But what if he had chosen Billy, not because he was desperate, but because Billy was the next to be tested, and Billy passed the test, but Billy thinks of himself as kind of a dirtbag, a kid who grew up on the street, who doesn't, you know, offer much to the world. And then he could have this self-doubt of, okay, well, why did I deserve these powers? And that's an interesting way to take the character.
And if you wanted to even further flesh that out, you could have this kind of, this, bring the family into it, bring the other foster children into it, and have this kind of bickering between them as to like, well, wait a minute. I led just the same kind of life as you did. Why couldn't I have been the one? You know what I mean? Like that tension between them.
You get a tiny bit of that with Freddie, but you don't get much of it.
No. And exactly. You only have that little bit of that would have opened up the window for more of that conflict with the family. Because let's face it. I mean, if Shazam was actually looking for the most pure of heart. I mean, his little sister, the little girl, her name escapes me now.
Yeah, Daphne.
She deserved it.
Give her the powers. She's obviously the best person.
And she can keep a secret. Yeah.
Yes. She's the best person. She can keep a secret. Obviously you want Daphne to have the powers. If I were picking, that's who I'd have picked.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, Shazam does it because he's desperate. Like, but what does it say where this kid who has always been, who's had nobody believe in him, you could actually do this thing where you've got both Shazam believing in him and this family believing in him and him recoiling from both of those things and not understanding how to accept it and having to learn to accept his powers and his family at the same time.
Right. Exactly.
And right there, you've got something that is more resonant and plays the characters better.
And he could visit more titty bars along the way.
Of course. That was a nice, little scene. It's fine.
Yeah, but that was,
I'm not judging you.
That was a great introduction there, because what 14-year-old boy wouldn't want to at least kind of...
Of course that's what he's going to try. Like, sure. He's an adult. Of course he's going to try that.
Yep.
That's going to be his first thing he tries to get away with.
But yes, you're right. I mean, I think since DC rejected our screenplay of breaking this into two. They did the best they could into it. I just think they overshot where they should have landed.
Well, and I think you know as well as I do that they were told you have to have a supervillain and you have to have a big third act fight.
Right.
Because there's never been a superhero film without a supervillain and a big third act fight.
Yep.
And even if it doesn't feel right for this story or these characters, they're like, no, like, for whatever you want to do, like, we get that you want to do things, we get that you have ideas of your own, but this is the formula. Like, you're making a formula movie.
And that's
at the end of the day.
And when you have the good part of it, the healthiest part of it in the center, that does not feel formulaic, that does have this kind of, this sweet echoing back to a simpler time, mm-hmm. and where stories weren't so released every single week. That by fitting it back into that formula,
Every time you see it backsliding into just being another Marvel formula superhero movie, it feels like there's so much more they could be doing here.
Yeah.
And that is really, it's kind of a tragedy, but I think the good parts of it, I think the unique parts of it are strong enough that I really loved sitting in the theater watching them, and I stand by my statement that it's one of their strongest movies.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree. I think that if they continue to tweak and to work on the fact that, hey, look, we don't have to actually play by these exact same narrative rules and push themselves out. Like, this was a gentle nudge outside of it, but I think if they feel more emboldened in the future to really kind of push it, then instead of always having to go darker, 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 this is a great way to kind of make it so that it's fun and watch him go through the awkward adolescence and, you know, there's a lot of levity to be had here.
Oh, totally. Especially, I found it weird because there's adult versions of all of them. And then when Mary Marvel has the adult version, I'm like, is that the same girl? Is that
no, too. I thought the exact same
It thing. Wasn't. I thought it was the same person.
Okay. Because again, it takes place in the dark because.
Because it's so freaking dark you can't tell. Like, did they just change her makeup and hair? Is that the same? I think that might be the same. It's not the same person. But it really looks like they were so close with the casting.
Yes.
And she's already a 20-year-old, so.
Right.
It's weird that it's not just the same person.
So, speaking of casting, do you know who played the Seven Deadly Sins? I had no idea.
I did not know who played the Seven Deadly Sins.
Mr. King Kong / Gollum
himself. What?
Yes, Caesar, yes.
Andy Serkis played the Seven Deadly Sins.
Yes, he did.
That man's a genius.
Isn't he? Like, I swear. He's
such a genius.
I don't know how he got himself to evaporate like that, but that's pretty awesome.
Jeez, come on.
It's another achievement.
Oh, God. Well, the man is incredible. Hold on 1 second. I gotta check something.
Okay.
All okay, right. The thing that gets me right is, I just want you to wrap your head around an idea.
Alright,
that is kind of gonna be hard. It blew my mind when I realized it. In the past 2 months, there have been two different movies about a character named Captain Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those movies star Jaimin Honshu.
Yep.
And in neither one of the movies is the character ever called Captain Marvel.
All right, now hold on a second. I'm trying to clear some space in my brain to get all of this. Let me flesh some shit out here.
That is ridiculous. How did that happen?
I know. And I have to give him particular credit in this because I love Jaimin Honshu.
Oh, that's great.
But he does have the tendency at times to swing for the fences sometimes.
He goes big. The man goes big.
And he had the opportunity to in this one, and he was quite restrained for someone with the amount of power that he wielded in this.
Yes.
So I thoroughly enjoyed his performance in that, as brief as it was.
He's barely in the movie, but he's a lot of fun in the movie.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. In a fun movie, period. I mean, the 90 minutes of it was really just smile ear to ear, grin, and just a sweet lark, which I never thought I would ever say about a DC movie, but.
Yeah. No, but it's so much DC had gotten into its head that it is better than fun.
Yep.
You know, it's like, we're the ones, and I mean, blame Christopher Nolan.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all Christopher Nolan's fault. I mean, I don't want to be too hard on the guy. They're good movies he made, but then they're like, I swear to God, I mean, this was an actual quote where they're like, why don't you do cute little mid-credits, end-credits stuff in the DC movies? And his response was, because they're real movies. Jesus Christ, Christopher Nolan.
It's more Zack Snyder fetishizing his and
you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
And it's like Christopher Nolan did a thing and Zack Snyder was like, I'm going to like take the Chris Nolan aesthetic and just spread it everywhere.
Exactly. Exactly. That's therein lies the issue. Cause I think unlike Zack Snyder, Christopher Nolan had a beginning and an end that he, and as unclear as it may have been in the last installment or as messy as it might have been, he still had an arc that he was going to follow. Whereas Zack Snyder saw it more of a, hey, let's change the filter of the lighting here. Let's slow this down. Let's take all of the aesthetic elements of it and copycat those.
And that's all he could bring to the table is a visual, like all he could bring to the table is the visuals because he's not a storyteller.
Right. Yep. You know?
And just fundamentally, he's not a storyteller. So yeah, I guess that's our shot at Zack Snyder, who doesn't really work there anymore, apparently. And hopefully that will be for the best as DC goes forward. Between the entertaining and less dark than it has been Aquaman and the full on almost entirely not dark Captain Marvel, they're heading in a good direction where it's possible to enjoy a movie. And so
we have Suicide Squad that is going to be the second Suicide Squad installment now with a new director and the casting who did they just announce?
Idris Elba is going to be playing the new Deadshot. I hope that's going to be so much fun.
Sold.
I am a little concerned that it might not actually happen now that James Gunn got his Guardians of the Galaxy job back.
Yeah.
So that might fall apart.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. If he's already written the script, maybe someone else can direct it, but I don't know if he's already written the script.
Yep.
It's tough because you think he had that job for 5 months, but I'm like, yeah, but James Gunn actually puts work into his scripts, unlike David Ayer, who, true story, wrote Suicide Squad in 10 days. And it shows.
I was going to say 10 days. Wow. I thought it was a weekend retreat that he was on.
At absolute most. Cocktail
napkin. Yeah.
Oh no, you're absolutely right. It's terrible. It's a god awful movie that has nothing to recommend it. Anyway, let's wrap that up here.
Yeah.
Saying that, Shazam is, I got to say, like, it's a lot of fun and I think people will enjoy it. You're right that it goes shockingly dark for what is ostensibly a children's film.
Right, right.
But overall, I think there's so much to enjoy here, and I think people are going to, like, love it going forward, and I think it's got a good chance to inspire better things from DC in the future.
No doubt. And I just want to put a caveat that I don't think that darkness can't exist in children's films.
Of course.
You know, I think that's perfectly fine in children.
We've all seen Time Bandits.
Exactly, right, exactly. But I feel like it shifted it. Like the tone was such a despairingly different shift that it's fine, but you have to stick to your script and pick one or the other. And I felt like the two just sometimes
clash. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. And one last thing. I did like that clearly in all of the reshoots, they added a bunch of, digs at Aquaman because they were ticked off at losing their Christmas,
their
Christmas release date. Cause this is in every conceivable way, a Christmas movie. Santa is in this movie.
And, And shout out to Henry Cavill, who his cameo was amazing in this as Superman.
Such a beautiful performance by Superman in this film.
Insert head here later digitally.
You know, it would be funny because apparently he wasn't available because he was shooting Fallout.
Right.
And it would actually be funny if that had really been him and they didn't show his head because he had the Fallout mustache.
Yeah, exactly. That was great.
If they reveal that in the special features, I will be so delighted.
Or digitally put in Nicolas Cage.
Cage's face, yes. Oh, God. All right. So, as always, we want to thank you for joining us in this special mini-sode. Is there anything you'd like to recommend, Rob, before we head out?
Pet Sematary, I will.
Did you enjoy it?
And, yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was, had a lot of good, purposeful jump scares. I'm not I don't mind jump scares if there's a purpose that they serve. And as long as it's just not a cat in the trash can, then yeah. That's, you know, that's fine with me. And I feel like it built up the attention and they handled it really well.
Nice. My question to you is just as this is who I am. No one's ever going to replace Fred Gwynne in my heart.
Yeah.
But how is John Lithgow?
John Lithgow does as good of a job as you could trying to fill the oversized shoes of Fred Gwynne. You know, I mean, he's not the same. He doesn't have that. There was just the face, the body movements, everything about him, you know, just fit that part.
The weight of his performance in that movie is one of my favorite things in any Stephen King movie ever. And the gravity of him.
He sounds like a little too waspy for that.
Yeah, he is.
Dead, you know, they grizzled him up. They gave him a nice hearty beard and he handles the gravitas, the moments of gravitas he handles quite well. So yes, I definitely would recommend that.
All right. Well, yeah. Thank you so much for recommending me. I didn't know if I was going to check it out, but I'm definitely not going to see Hellboy right away. The reviews have kind of soured me on the whole idea of Hellboy.
I was holding hope because I do like the director, and I still The Descent is still up there in my top films of the genre. But man, yeah. It's getting savaged.
It's brutal what they're saying about this movie. So wow. But yeah, I'm surprised to hear Pet Sematary went as well as it did, and I'll be excited to check that out a little later on. So yay. Yeah. Thank you for the recommendation. For me, I'm just going to recommend what I always recommend, the TV show Wise Guy. That's a little nod to you, which we're going to talk about later. But anyway, Rob, as always, thanks for coming and doing the show. I was really interested to hear your take on this movie because, as you saw, there's a lot to think about here. And yep. It's one of those things where it's like you can see, had they twisted it at that 90 degrees, you really would have had something incredible. But instead, we had something that was just really good.
And something that was really unexpected, because when it was first announced, I gotta say, I really had very little hope for it, and I thought they did as good of a job as they could with the constraints that they had to work with.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to look at it. Yeah. All right, so we will see you back here for a regular episode next week, but until then, I'm gonna say au revoir.
Adios.